Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, because Kelly is busy throwing his children out a window. Not really. I just told him I wasn't going to say that, so that was, of course, the first thing I said. Kelly's dealing with some family issues tonight, not really involving defenestration. I also wanted to get that word in there, because why the hell not? And, you know, so I'm here to talk with you tonight about NXT 4. January. It's July. I'm rushing the year along. July 11th, 2023. And here to talk about it with me is the kitten hater himself, Bruce Hazelwood.
You can call me the kitten hater all you want, but I am not defenestrating anything at the moment. So at least I am not causing physical harm to anyone or anything. My name is Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. You can find my report on NXT next week, as we will have, hopefully, the actual in-ring debuts of Bronco Lima and Lucian Price. Lucian Price was wearing a WSU jacket. WSU is where I earned all three of my degrees. So I'm watching Washington University, just throw that out there. Also, if you are an AEW fan, I was on the Collision Post show on Saturday with Wade after what was pretty much universally agreed upon as their best episode of Collision yet. It was actually the first time I was on with Wade in 17 months. So go ahead and check that out if you haven't already. And actually might be a good time to stick with Collision going forward.
And just to kind of fill everybody in, Kelly got a kitten, and he sent us a picture of the kitten, and Bruce was all like, "Boo, kitten." And Kelly and I are like, "Who the hell boos a kitten?"
I said,
"Kind
of, boo, kitten.
Kind of monster are you?"
I just wanted to see some defenestration. Let's go. I mean, come
yeah,
on.
But at the expense of a cute little kitten?
I didn't say defenestrate the kitten. I just wanted to see some defenestration. There's a difference here.
Okay. All right. Fine. All right, let's stop talking about windows and throwing things out of them and kittens. And hey, let's actually talk about what we're here to talk about tonight, and that's NXT. We had a main event tonight, Judgment Day versus Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes. That match went 12 minutes and 13 seconds. Earlier in the night, opening the night, the Judgment Day came out to the ring, kind of answering the challenge from Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams last week, continuing their feud with the Finn Balor match on Monday Night Raw as well. And eventually, you know, Trick Williams, Carmelo Hayes end up coming out to the ring. And eventually this match gets made, tag team match between Carmelo Hayes, Trick Williams, Finn Balor, and Damian Priest. I wasn't planning on hosting tonight, so I don't have all of my notes written like I would if I'm usually hosting. Kelly bailed on us with like 3 seconds to spare. So going off of some Kelly's notes tonight, and he doesn't write nearly as much as I do. So anyway, the match itself, I thought it was a decent tag match, you know, some shenanigans here. We saw Ilya Dragunov come out towards the end of the match to Carmelo Hayes from getting hit with the Money in the Bank briefcase from Damian Priest. Ilya Dragunov won his match against Bron Breakker, which we'll talk about later on tonight, won his match against Bron Breakker for the number one contender for the NXT title, which was kind of weird because they didn't really say it was for it. They kind of implied it, but then after the match, like, yeah, he's going to be challenging for the title. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we get there. But because of that interference, we ended up seeing Judgment Day end up getting the win. There was a little bit of a miscommunication, and Carmelo Hayes hit Ilya Dragunov, and Trick was like, "Oh my God, what did I just do?" and got wound up getting, I think he got powerbombed for his troubles, if I'm not mistaken, and rolled up for the win. I like seeing Judgment Day here on NXT. I talked about this last week when my buddy Josh was on the show with us, or with me. I like seeing Judgment Day kind of down in NXT and seeing these kind of the main roster stories intertwine with NXT. but like kind of subtly. It's not like we're, you know, really mixing brands here, like too much. But I feel like it's not only is it getting an awesome act down at NXT, you know, Judgment Day, you know, to kind of get some more eyeballs in NXT, but it's also introducing some NXT stars to the main roster. You know, in that way, when they inevitably do debut on the main roster, people already kind of know who they are if they're not already following NXT. I think all around, it's not only is it fun, but I think it's strategic as well to get not only get, like I said, get eyeballs on the product, but introduce new characters to the main roster before their actual debut. I've rambled on long enough. Bruce, what'd you think about the main event?
Yeah, sorry about the noise in the background, everyone. It's a very windy day here in Honolulu, so again, a lot of it was fun though and whatnot. So the match was fun. You know, during the break, I actually got to see, this was one of the rare times where the online player showed the split screen. So a lot of, it was basically just Priest and Balor beating the hell out of Carmelo Hayes throughout the entire break. So he took a lot of damage. And I think my biggest issue here is, if you're trying to build up your men's NXT champion and you're showcasing him on Raw, okay, maybe that one you couldn't have avoided it, but this is definitely a situation where you could have had Trick Williams take the fall instead of Carmelo Hayes, thus your champion isn't taking the actual pin. But here he takes it, and he takes it pretty clean. You know, after the interference, it was a South of Heaven, that sit-out chokeslam that Damian Priest does, that he really gets a lot of elevation when he puts someone up there, and it really looks impressive in the coup de grace followed. So I just feel like if you're going to do something with this and they're not going to get the victory, you can't keep having Carmelo Hayes losing to Finn Balor, essentially. That's what keeps happening, right? So that aside, you know, the match itself was fun. I think the biggest surprise and shock to me was that this match ended basically right at the top of the hour. There was no overrun, and I was just flummoxed, but also happy that there wasn't an extra 7 to 8 minutes on the show. So going back to the opening segment, you know, Damian Priest, I do like him. And he said, the Arch of Infamy is never missed a bullseye, but he never won the men's NXT championship when he was down there. And I think he might have won the North American championship, but it wasn't a very long reign. So he definitely has, especially the NXT run. But going back to your point about the sort of overlap, what I think they did well here is, especially when Judgment Day opened the show, Vic Joseph, all of his things aside, he mentioned the fact that not only do all of them, aside from Dom, right, the three main ones, have a connection to NXT as where they started in WWE, but all of the champions that are running Raw and SmackDown have connections to NXT, the main champions, right? So you have Roman Reigns, you have Asuka, you have, who am I missing? Rhea Ripley, of course. And then you have Seth Rollins. And, I mean, Gunther too. So, and the Austin Theory as well. So you have everybody that is a champion, and they're showing not just the importance of NXT, but I guess in a sense justify why that overlap can happen. So, yeah, I would just, if I could do anything, I would just switch places for Hayes and Williams and have Williams take the fall. But other than that, I think this was fine. I think the continued, not necessarily, okay, I guess you could say a bit of a rivalry, but I think the interplay between Judgment Day and Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams has been done well, aside from Hayes continuing taking the pin.
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, to see Carmelo Hayes take the pin was, I don't know, I do. I wish it wasn't necessarily him. I mean, they had the easy out with Trick Williams there. Like you said, he already lost to Finn Balor once on, you know, on Raw. I kind of expected him to pick up the win here tonight. Granted, it wasn't necessarily clean, you know, because of the Ilya interference, which obviously sets up that story for the feud between Ilya and Carmelo Hayes, which is more or less cold right now. I mean, obviously they've got that match coming up at Great American Bash, but you know, with the exception of this this interaction tonight, I can't remember the last time either one of them interacted with one another. So, you know, yeah, I mean, overall, you know, I'm okay with the finish. Yeah, like I said, would have been kind of nice if Trick Williams did get it, but whatever, I can understand it. Especially, like, and I'm also kind of wondering if maybe, like, Finn Balor or Damian Priest even gets involved in the NXT title match, becomes a triple threat or something like that. Maybe that's why they wound up going this way tonight. I don't know. But just a thought. Just a thought. All right, let's go over to the phone lines. If you want to be part of the show, you can call 515-605-9345. Press 1 to let me know you want to be part of the show. Raises a little hand next to your phone number and lets us know you want to be part of the show. You can also email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and we'll get to those emails a little bit later. If you have any, I haven't even checked the mailbox yet, but yep, we do. We've got one from Kevin Catani so far. Let's go to... I believe this is Brad. Brad, can you hear me?
Hey, Nate. How you doing, man? Bruce, good to have you on as well. I missed you last week.
Good to hear you, Brad. Good to hear you. What do you got for us tonight?
Yeah, so, you know, I was going to echo some of the same sentiments about, like, you know, first of all, the Dragunov Bron Breakker match was, like, to me, that was one of the best matches I've seen on TV all year by far. I mean, I think it's, you know, unless I'm like missing something or my eyes were deceiving me, I thought that was an incredible, incredible match. I think some of the shots that Braun was giving Ilya were so vicious. I mean, one in particular was like this clothesline where it wasn't like a normal clothesline. It just looked like Braun really wound up and almost like took his head off. It was kind of near the end of the match. I think you guys remember what I'm talking about. But that spear when Dragunov was coming off the top rope was really incredible. And then, you know, the Braun going for his finisher, where he picks you up over the head and kind of gives you that slam, and Dragunov reversing that, and just so many kickouts, and it almost felt like a pay-per-view match or something. It was so good, right? I mean, but my problem with the show is like a few things. Like, first of all, when at the beginning, when Judgment Day's out there, and Vic Joseph said something like, Damian Priest could cash in, you know, that briefcase. And at one point, Booker T says, yeah, but, you know, Damian Priest has got bigger fish to fry. Like, I understand, like, you know, that's, you know, probably not the championship he's going for, but I don't think you say that if you're Booker T on that show. And I didn't like what Bruce said. Like, why you have Trick Williams in the match? Like, do you think it was that Trick is so inexperienced that he wouldn't have been able to kind of pull off that sequence at the end with, you know, the briefcase and the, you know, Damian's finishing move and then the coup de grace? Like, do you think it was something that, like, why would they have Carmelo take the pin and then Priest, and I'll let you guys respond, but Priest standing over him while he's all hurt with the briefcase and them all posing, and there's not even a thought to cashing in on that championship, making it seem even less valuable. So that I didn't like, and I want your thoughts on that. I'm sure, I know you gave some, but.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, with Damian Priest, you know, well, actually, hold on. Let me backtrack a little bit with Carmelo Hayes, I guess, taking the pin. Like I said earlier, I want to see where they go with it, because if there is, like, there's a follow up and Finn Balor's like, look, I pinned you twice. I should, you know, I'm already a 2-time NXT champion. Let's make it a third time. I could certainly see them doing something like that, and maybe that being a reason why they had Carmelo Hayes take a pin tonight. Is first Trick Williams not necessarily having like the ability to pull that off? I think Trick's a phenomenal talent, and I think he's overshadowed right now by Carmelo Hayes, rightfully so, but I think he absolutely is. I totally think he could pull it off. He's impressed me more and more and more, each time we see him in the ring. You know, he's certainly not up to like Carmelo Hayes's level, but I don't think he's that far behind him, quite frankly. The two paired together, I think, is a phenomenal pairing. They complement each other very well. when Trick Williams inevitably breaks off and does his own thing, I think he's got the charisma to kind of carry on to be a star in his own right. Again, he's going to have to fight out from under that shadow of Carmelo Hayes, but I think it's certainly possible. Maybe not like it might not be the easiest thing in the world for him to do, but I think it's certainly possible. There was something else I wanted to say, and I can't remember what it was. So while I think about it, Bruce, let me throw it over to you.
So I don't think there's anything to do with them having issues with Trick's experience or lack thereof. Every time he goes out there, whether it's on the mic or in the ring, he continually impresses me with how much he's proved the last time he was out there. Tonight was no exception. And if that is a concern, then there's one easy solution to that, and that's just book a different spot where you're not having to rely on that. So to me, I really just have no – I can't justify how they did this. In a similar sense, this was like Punk and Samoa Joe on Saturday. Punk got the role of Blair, which is like, why? Well, it didn't make any sense how the story was told in Smash. But the most obvious, I guess, is that they wanted to get a trilogy out of it. Maybe they're trying to do that here, but, I mean, he's lost both matches that he's been involved in with Finn Balor. So, to me, it's a bit, I don't know, I just can't justify what they did. And regarding Priest and the briefcase and Booker T, one, it's just when it comes to Booker T and commentary, I honestly don't know how much he's listening to what's in his ear and how much he's just going off script, because a lot of times he just seems to be doing anything that he wants to do. And so the thing is at least Priest was looking at him a bit with the briefcase held up, so it gives you a little bit of an inclination. And I do think that to a certain extent it's still a possibility, just due to the fact that they had a Rumble winner go for the NXT Championship, and that was Charlotte Flair for Reaver. So, he just won the briefcase, and you get a year, so we have some time until or that needs to really be fleshed out. So now I think it's fine regarding Priest having the briefcase and kind of how the NXT Championship plays into it right now.
That was what I was going to say, was Damian Priest in the title. Like, I think, and kind of also tying into what Booker T said is what I wanted to bring up. I kind of echo what you said. I think Booker T goes just kind of on his own, like off on his own every once in a while, or more than that. I don't know how scripted they are in NXT compared to the main roster. I'm sure it's, a fair bit, but I feel like color commentary isn't necessarily as scripted as the play-by-play guy anyway. Kind of for a more genuine reaction and things like that. But that's just me spitballing anyway. I as far as Booker goes, like, it's Booker. I agree. I don't necessarily think that's what you'd want to necessarily be saying, but it's Booker. He's going to book. With Damian Priest, I think we all as fans know that he's probably not going to cash the Money in the Bank in on Carmelo Hayes. Like, I think just toying with it isn't a bad idea. Why not? I mean, you can right now this year, you can cash Money in the Bank in on whoever you want. So why not toy with it, and get that heat from the crowd. It's probably not going to happen, but I don't mind them teasing it because, hell, it could happen. Bruce just brought up, like, I never really expected, Charlotte to come down and challenge Rhea Ripley for the NXT title, after the Royal Rumble. They could certainly do it, but I think it's a very, very, very low chance. But like I said, I don't mind them at least playing around with it and, teasing the idea. But Brad, back to you.
Yeah, thank you. Do you guys, just on a programming note, like, NXT always is 2 hours and 8 minutes. And today they went off you know, at an hour and 59 minutes and 59 seconds. And I mean, do you think, I mean, I don't know if anyone even cares or noticed or if it even matters, but do you think they just switched it back to 2 hours and got rid of that extra 8 minutes? Because every week it's 2:08.
So, yeah, I personally, I think you get rid of the overrun. I don't know. It doesn't seem like if USA will give you an overrun every once in a while, sure, go ahead, use it. Make the show feel a little bit more important. Like, oh, my God, all right, you know, the action's still going. We're going. We're going to stick with the action until, you know, till it's over or something like that. But to do the overrun every week, I just, I don't know. I feel like it's overkill. I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised not to see the overrun tonight. Matter of fact, when the match, the main event started, it was, I think it was like 9:43 Eastern, which I'm thinking to myself, like, this is going to be a long main event. And I mean, you know, it was, I think it was, you know, about what, 15 minutes or so, give or take. I guess, okay, 12 minutes and 13 seconds, according to Kelly Bell to Bell. I was kind of surprised, you know. I was thinking, you know, usually the main event kind of starts a little bit closer to like, you know, 9:50 Eastern or something like that. So my guess is that they owed them an overrun because the Seth Rollins Bron Breakker match went 15 minutes over. And so I'm wondering if maybe like they owed them 8 minutes or something like that. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. If this is an ongoing thing and we're, you know, next week it's the same deal, like, you know, we'll see. I'm kind of thinking it's probably a 1 week thing. It might have to do with the 15 minute overrun that they had a few weeks ago, but I don't know. I was just, like I said, I don't think the overrun's needed. It just kind of seems like it's overkill. Use it sparingly. Yeah, that's what I got to say anyway.
Yeah, I especially hate it when they do the overrun when it's a talking segment and it's not a match. That really, it makes no sense. So
right.
I feel like they can pull off a little more of those. I shouldn't say that. I just feel like the overrun is unnecessary. And I can't complain too much about the time, but it would allow us to start our show sooner, which also means we get our show done sooner. So there's that.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, here you are, what is it, 4 o'clock in the afternoon over there? Like
4:42, you know, to be exact.
All right, yeah. So, you know, get the show over early and stuff. You know, it's usually like almost 1 a.m. for me. Anyway. Brad, throw it back to you.
Yeah, one more thing is just on Bron Breakker. Do you guys think it's a swan? This was like a swan song tonight? Like, do you think this is it? Because I can't imagine where they go with him from here. Like, I really can't even envision an opponent unless, you know, becomes a three-way for the NXT championship. I don't even know what they would do. So do you guys think this was it for him? Like, tonight was the end, kind of like the Creed brothers are done? Or, I don't know where you go with him from here.
I don't necessarily know where you go with him from here either, but I also don't think it's his time to go up. I wrote tonight in the hits and misses that I feel like Bron Breakker's still missing something. As a heel, I feel like he's connecting with the crowd a hell of a lot more than he used to as a face, but he's still not connecting on the level as like Carmelo Hayes is connected with the audience. And I think it's probably a good idea for him to stay in NXT a little bit longer to try and find that or hone his character a little bit more. I mean, he's like great in the ring, you know, as you said earlier, Brad. I mean, the match between Dragunov and Breakker was fantastic. Matter of fact, I went into that match really not like, I wasn't looking forward to it whatsoever. I'm like, eh, because I mean, I'm not a huge Bron Breakker guy. So, you know, it was probably the only time I've, you know, not really been super hyped for an Ilya Dragunov match. And by the end of it, they sucked me in. And I thought it was great. But Bron Breakker, I feel like his mic work, he still needs a way to connect with the crowd. He's getting there. Like, I don't want to see he hasn't connected with the crowd. He certainly has. But again, not on like the same level as like Carmelo Hayes has, or, you know, hell, I'm going to throw it out. LA Knight, you know, in on the main roster right now. I mean, he's He's absolutely got it. So I don't think it's his swan song to go up to the main roster just yet. If it happened, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised either, because, you know, he is being pushed pretty heavily, has been since he debuted. And he kind of seems like that chosen golden child, almost in the mold of Roman Reigns. But I don't think it's his time yet. Bruce?
So I'm going to disagree with a lot of what you said. I had full confidence that Dragunov was winning this match, because there's no reason we need Hayes Breaker 3, and there's no reason Breaker needs to be on NXT any longer. So he's probably going to get written off. If anything, there might be some kind of segment at the Great American Bash, or some kind of one-off match right here with someone who needs to get on there or get on the card or whatnot. But there was no reason for him to be involved in the title match again. So the match, I'm going to tie back to what Brad was saying a little earlier about the match. Yeah, it was a good match, because all you asked Breaker and Ilya Dragunov to do were three things: hit hard, hit often, and hit fast. And that's all they have to do, right? That's all they really have to do. Certain wrestlers, they can get away with only doing certain things. And when you are Dragunov and you are Breaker, if you just hit hard and you hit fast, really, you're going to get away with a lot of things. And the match itself was just one of those hard-hitting affairs that, what's the word I'm looking for? That really feed into both wrestlers' strengths. So for me, it was definitely a good match, because not only did they do that, but they got time to tell the story involved. And I do quibble a bit with how many false finishes there were, maybe just because I was fully expecting Dragunov to win. But I do like the twist where he hit the Torpedo Moscow at the end to the back of Breaker's head instead of to the front like he does. So that was nice. And with Breaker, I promo style will do better on Raw or SmackDown than it did here at NXT, mostly because the NXT crowd, not just live in the audience, but also who pay attention to it, generally are those who are more into the weeds about the business and promo aspects and all those different things. And when you have a lot more families and whatnot, sometimes you just need someone that you can get behind who gets you hyped. And if Breaker can do that on Raw better than he can do it here, then I think that's good for them. But like I said, I don't remember when it was, but with Breaker, I feel like if you bring him in, you can't just do those simple, like, these debut vignettes, he's the son of this and that. You have to have him come in and just immediately make an impact, spear somebody randomly or whatnot, and attack them after a match, something that just gets over to the fans right away that he needs to be someone that takes seriously out of the gate instead of building up to that with those vignettes, because a lot of times they do that. The debut doesn't tend to go as well. So I feel like Breaker has nothing left to do except improve his promo ability, and maybe being on the road with people who are doing it week in and week out on a larger stage and have been doing it for years, instead of on a developmental stage, will actually do better for him for where he's at in his development.
I mean, I can't say I disagree with anything you said either. So, you know, if he does get called up to main roster, like, it may not be a bad thing for him at all. So, Brad, let me throw it back to you if you have any follow-up or anything else for us.
Yeah. Very, very last thing. You know, obviously we saw the match set up between Dominic and Wesley. Do you guys think that a title has a chance of changing hands there? Like, I don't know. It makes me just think, because, like, of what we've been seeing. I mean, Carmelo Hayes is getting pinned quite a few times already by the Judgment Day on Raw and here. And, I mean, why would Wesley not, you know? So I'm just curious what you guys think. But I don't know. I mean, does Dominic what – I don't even know what would happen after that. I doubt he just shows up on NXT all the time with the North American Championship. But I want your guys' opinion on that, and I'll listen. You know, thanks for the generosity with the time, and you guys are great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, as always, Brad. We certainly appreciate it. So I'm very torn with this, because there's part of me that's like, okay, I love Wesley as North American champion. He's done a great job. You know, he was never supposed to be a singles guy. Love his story and all that. Don't want to see him lose the title, even though it's probably time for him to lose the title. He's I believe he's the longest reigning North American champion at this point, which seems crazy to me because it feels like he just won it. But, man, I guess it's been a while. So, I mean, it's probably time for him to lose it. There's part of me that goes to Dominic, and I'm like, I don't know, I like that idea, but at the same time, I love that idea because Dominic has so much heat. He's got so much heat right now, and it's like, it's so hard for somebody to actually build that much heat, whether it's go away heat or what. But it doesn't matter. He has people caring about him by not caring about him, if you know what I mean. I could kind of see it. I could see, you know, and I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm kind of like torn. I'm 50-50, I think. But I could certainly see Dominic picking up a win over Wesley. We have Rhea Ripley come and, you know, interfere in some way, sort of similar like to how she did tonight, or how both she and Dominic did tonight in the main event. You know, Rhea interferes or Damian interferes, somebody in Judgment Day interferes, costs Wesley the title. Dominic's now the champ. He's, you know, cocky and you know, dirty Dom and doing all of that, showing up on the main roster with the North American title, similar to what Dolph Ziggler did when he won the NXT title from Braun Breaker. So now all of a sudden you've got another title on Raw, which, hey, well, what's this title? They got to talk about it. NXT, get more eyeballs in NXT. And then you have him hold the title for like a month or two, show up maybe, you know, six or so times over the course of that, like 2 months or whatever, and then drop the title to whoever's next in line. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I don't necessarily know if I love it either, but I think it could certainly be fun if they did go that way. My guess is Wesley probably retains, but like I said, I'm kind of torn 50-50 right now. Bruce, what do you think? Push me over the edge one way or another.
Well, as I said, it is time for Wesley to lose. It's not just the longest reigning, but the most title defensive. But for the moment, Mustafa Ali is definitely an answer. I think this is going to take the title from Wesley. So I'm sticking with that. And you have to think about Dom's character in all of this, right? Dirty Dom, his character, the wrestler that he is right now, is someone that gets into these matches but loses all the big-time matches because, I mean, the mouth and the faction allow him to get away with a lot and get into these sort of situations. But when it comes down to the actual match aspect, the story they tell with him is that he's not yet at that level to where he can pull out the victories in these matches and he needs to gain more experience. So probably I just love Wesley's reaction to this whole thing. Like, what's going on? Everything was just as you would expect it to happen with someone who's acting like Dom across from you. So I thought that was done well. I just feel like you look at Dom's character, he's not meant to win these sort of things. He loses all these types of matches anyway. So I don't think Wesley's going to lose. I think it'll be a title retain. There will be some shenanigans probably, but I think that'll still help, or that'll still lead to Dominic losing. And then you have Ali and him at the Bash. And who knows, maybe Ali is the one who comes out and equalizes and makes it so that whatever advantage they were trying to get doesn't actually succeed, and that's how we retain. But I don't see him losing. I feel like when he does lose, it'll be at the Bash, then Mustafa Ali is going to take over as the next North American champion. So we go basically from Carmelo to Wesley to Mustafa Ali, basically just you know, great wrestler. So I feel like that's what's going to happen. And there shouldn't be bet on wrestling, so don't go betting, but I don't think there's really any worry about Lee losing next week. If it's for the title, if it's a non-title match, and they use that to put him into the triple threat match, I could see that happening, but it sounds more like it's going to be an open challenge for the actual title. So in that case, I think it's going to be easy. It's not easy, but a victory for Wesley next Tuesday night.
You know, out of sight, out of mind, I wasn't even thinking about Mustafa Ali, but the second you said Mustafa Ali, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing. So I take that back. I definitely think Wesley is going to retain then because, yeah, Mustafa Ali, he's here. He wasn't here tonight, but he's down in NXT. He wants that title. And, yeah, that seems like the direction they're probably going to be going long term. So I would agree with you. I don't think Dom is going to be walking away with the North American title. It would be fun. It would be fun, but I don't think it's going to happen. All right, let's see here. Let's go and let's talk about Stax versus Joe Coffey and the fate of the Don. It's so nice, you know, as I wrote in the hits and misses, what's more American than adding pro wrestling to our judicial system? Because if Stax was to win this match here tonight, Joe, all of the charges against Tony D'Angelo would be dropped. And if not, well, Tony D'Angelo would be screwed. So this match went 10 minutes, 45 seconds, had a little bit of shenanigans here from Gallus. And remind me the name of the other tag team that's debuting.
Lucian Price and Bronco Neva.
Yes, them. Thank you. I'll remember that at some point. I don't know why that doesn't want to stick in my head. Lucian Price probably
those
will.
Those are good
but
wrestling names. How could you forget those?
Dude, I am lucky I remember my own name half the time. So, yeah. they're great wrestling names. I just, for some reason, they just don't want to stick in my brain right now. Or at least the past couple weeks, anyway. But, yeah, so anyway, Stax wound up picking up the win here. We saw, and next week we're going to have Tony D'Angelo come back to NXT as a bit of a homecoming as they hyped this week. I thought this was a pretty good match. I feel like Stax is so underrated. I'm pretty sure you feel the same about it, about him. Like he's almost like Trick Williams. He's in the shadow of Tony D'Angelo right now, much like Williams in the shadow of Carmelo Hayes. But it's kind of just because he's the sidekick. He's the underboss, right? But Stax, I feel like, could wrestle circles around Tony D'Angelo. He's such a better wrestler than D'Angelo is at this point. And I feel like he really proved that here tonight. Joe Coffey, he stands on his own. I mean, you know, we all know how good Joe Coffey is and Gallus is in general. You know, but I feel like this is a real test for Stax tonight. This is probably the biggest match of his career to date. And I feel like he really pulled it off here tonight. You know, and there was also that underlying, like, okay, is Stax going to, like, is he going to turn? Is he going to turn on Tony D'Angelo and align himself with Gallus and, you know, let Tony D'Angelo rot in jail or what have you, right? And that wasn't the case. And, you know, I mean, at least there was a story they were telling us on commentary that, you know, he didn't turn on Tony D'Angelo and he remained loyal to the family. So that kind of flies in the face of what we've been talking about for weeks, like who's the rat, who's the rat. It's got to be Stax. So I still think it probably is. I feel like this was kind of a bit of a red herring here tonight. We see Stax pick up the win. Tony D'Angelo gets out, but then we find out that he was the rat all along and he wanted him to get out so he could face him in the ring or something like that. I don't know. They'll come up with the story, I'm sure, or already have the story they need to tell. But overall I was okay with the way this went down. I really dug the match and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing Tony D'Angelo back and kind of where this goes, because I do feel like this is about to be a breakout for Stax. I don't think we're going to see the D'Angelo family stay together much longer. And I think we're going to see Stax break out and kind of do his own thing. And I kind of hope so, because I think right now he's almost being held back by Tony D'Angelo. Bruce, your thoughts on the whole Don thing?
Yeah, I mentioned the Stax improvement every time we see him out in the ring, and it is pretty startling. And I was going to compare him to Trick. You also brought up Trick, so it's not surprising to me. And I guess if Stax doesn't end up being the snitch, then I guess they will end up playing all of us, because we, you know, it's been
yeah.
Well done. Well, my so I have a couple questions still that came out of this. And one is, I don't know if they ever explained the charges that actually that Tony D'Angelo was actually facing, because I'm not sure if that's actually been
spelled
out.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
The second question is, oh gosh, why am I losing my question? Well, one is what was so if Joe Coffey and Stax had a deal, what was in it for Stax that would have made Coffey actually believe in the deal that they had brokered, and was just having D'Angelo go away enough? Oh, that was the other question. I don't know if it's ever been fully or explicitly said how Gallus plays a role in all of this. And I think it's just been assumed that Gallus has played a role. So that's another thing that I think needs to be shored up here when they finally get to telling the entire story, because this has been a months-long thing. And those are still questions that have been lingering. They could have answered, and if they haven't answered yet, I hope they have plans to answer in a way that actually makes the payoff believable and worth it. And then beyond that, you know, the match, like you said, good. Coffey, you're going to get what you get from him. He does look a lot more felt like than he was in UK, kind of doing a bit of the Gunther workout or training regimen, I guess. And Stax look good. I'm not the biggest fan of Stax just basically easily kicking out of Coffey's finisher, because if you're someone who hasn't really won matches at all, how can you so easily kick out of that when you've seen people who have better track records than you not kick out of that finisher? So that was a bit of a frown for me. And also, a very, very campy having D'Angelo call in and being on the speaker over the entire match of the arena can hear. That's kind of that was really, really bordering on being a bit too camp. But, you know, they tried something different. They're doing a lot of things different with this, not to mention the interview Mackenzie Mitchell had with Tony D'Angelo earlier in the night. So, yeah, I think for me there's those lingering questions and sort of the issue with the finisher kick out being so easy with Stax and going from there.
All right, let's go over to an email here from Kevin Catani. Kevin says, "Salutations, gents. Hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight's episode had a good mix of story progression and in-ring action. I love that Valentina and Yulisa are getting more airtime, and I hope they can get some wins soon. As far as the main event goes, I was not a fan of Melo taking the pin, especially with GAB on the horizon, Great American Bash on the horizon, and Judgment Day just stopping by for a short-term visit. Do you make anything of that, or am I making a kerfuffle over nothing?" And we talked a little bit about that earlier tonight, so I don't think you're making a kerfuffle over nothing, Kevin. I don't. That said, what stuck out to me was how solid Trick looked in the match. What do you think his prospects are? Will he get a chance to shine down the road, or will he be continue? Will he get a chance to shine down the road, or will he continue in his current role for the foreseeable future? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin Catani, PhD. P.S. Ask Kelly about the new cat, but don't really, because Bruce will throw it out the window. Anyway, we talked a little bit about Trick.
I never said I wanted to defenestrate kittens, okay? I just said I want to hear about defenestration instead of kittens. It's different.
It's just, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just not going to bring a cat around you or near you in a window. I'm just saying, man. Anyway, so we talked a little bit actually about Trick Williams tonight earlier too, but, you know, I do think he's going to have a chance to shine down the road. You know, like I said, I think he's going to be stuck in the shadow of Carmelo, and it's probably going to be a little bit hard for him to pull out as a single star, but I think he's got the charisma to do it. I already talked about that tonight. I don't want to necessarily keep harping on it, but I definitely think so. Anything to add, Bruce?
What was the first part of the email again before you got to was it just about Hayes taking the pin?
Hayes taking the pin.
All right. Yeah, I'll just direct you to the earlier part of the podcast, Good Doctor.
Indeed. All right, cool. Thank you very much, Kevin. As I said earlier tonight, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. If you want to be part of the show via email, 515-605-9345. You want to call in as Brad did earlier tonight. All right, let's talk about we already talked a bit about dragging off Bron Breakker, so do we have anything else to say about Ilya Dragunov Bron Breakker that we haven't already?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we kind of covered that pretty well already. So, all right, we'll skip that one. I guess we already talked about it, so we're not going to skip it. Ivy Nile versus Tiffany Stratton, 4 minutes and 39 seconds on a show that had 57 minutes, 13 seconds of wrestling tonight. This was Ivy Nile's first match as a single star, I guess, if you want to call it that. Diamond Mine
as
is
a stable-less star.
A stable-less star. Thank you. I like that better because singles, I guess, really wasn't the right terminology. And I knew it as I was saying it. I just couldn't think of something better. Stable-less star as the Creed brothers are no longer with NXT. Looks like they're probably going to the main roster. They lost that loser leaves town match last week. Or the week before. I don't know. Time just blurs together at this point. But, you know, at some point in the past, they lost that, the not-so-distant past.
It was last week.
It was last week. Okay, cool. I thought so. So they lost the Loser Leaves Town match. Ivy Nile is now the sole survivor of Diamond Mine. We even saw Schism approach her backstage. I believe it was before her match. It was either before or after the match. It was before. And essentially almost like invite her into Schism. Now that she is the sole survivor of Diamond Mine and, hey, she might need people by her side. But the match here tonight with Tiffany Stratton, I thought this was a pretty decent match. Ivy Nile, again, you know, we keep saying this over and over tonight about different talent, and I'm going to say it again about Ivy Nile. Every time she's in the ring, she is improving. When she first debuted, it wasn't super pretty. She was certainly green, but she showed there was a lot of promise there. I remember talking about that with Tom, Tom and Kelly, because I think it was before you were on the show, if I'm not mistaken, Bruce. But I remember talking about that with Tom and Kelly, and Tom was very high in Ivy Nile from what he'd seen on Level Up at the time. I definitely saw something there, but I liked what, you know, the presentation, but she certainly had things to work on. Tonight, I feel like, I don't want to say she was certainly, you know, flawless, but I think she gave Tiffany Stratton a damn good match. Stratton did pick up the win, as I feel like she should have, as she is the NXT champion. Ivy Nile, as an undercard talent, I don't think she should, I guess if Ivy Nile was going to go over Tiffany Stratton, a non-title match would be the time to do it. But I think Stratton should remain strong right now. Shouldn't be getting any losses or anything like that. At least cleanly anyway. Ivy Nile, like I said, I thought she looked absolutely great here. I'm really looking forward to seeing what she does now that she doesn't have a stable behind her. Her mic skills were not, they were also something that needed work. They were not super great. However, in the last handful of months, we have seen them improve. She's had a couple promos now where I remember, Bruce Kelly and I were kind of like, wow, that was great. Not what we expected out of Ivy Nile. I think she could certainly hang on her own at this point, but, we'll see exactly where she goes with it. But I'm very curious to see how she handles it, what the plan is for her. I could certainly see her in contention for the NXT women's title at some point, simply because of her look. But I don't necessarily see her winning the title. I feel like she'd probably be a good, stopgap opponent for Tiffany Stratton before she gets to, a bigger opponent or something like that. Anything else, anything to say on Stratton versus Nile?
Nile's improvement hasn't been as quick as the other ones we have talked about tonight, but it's been gradual. And for me, the one thing in her in-ring work I kept remarking upon as, you know, this is the one place where I really want to see her, you know, go next, is that there was definitely, you could see a sense of hesitancy in her movements and some of her moves, her matches before. But I didn't really see any of that hesitation tonight. And everything seemed to have not just the focus, but it seemed like she, but she had the confidence in what she was doing, what was asked of her to do. So to me, that was what stood out for the match tonight. Like you said, nothing really bad. It wasn't, this wasn't supposed to be a five-star match. It was a serviceable match. Tiffany Stratton's PME is just really, really majestic to look at. And tonight was another one that was just beautiful rotation off the top rope. So, and for me, you look at the promo afterwards where she's like, I try and just justifying that she didn't tap out because, you know, she won and she still has the title. And at the very end, just like a little girl not getting what she wanted. I didn't tap out. I'm just kind of whining. It just made me laugh so much. Like she gets it. She's going to make so much money.
Oh, she really is.
Yeah. And right now she's a great champion. She exactly knows what role she's supposed to play. And for Ivy Nile, as you were discussing the whole backstage segment with Schism, they did say there's always room for one more under Schism's tree. But what if they pull something here, just kind of like they did with GYV, and what if the Creed brothers come back as with new names and a new team name under Schism's tree, and then they just kind of torment Ivy now with that. So I wouldn't put it past them to do that. It's kind of hilarious to think about, actually, in a way. Last I saw, there weren't any concrete plans for the Creed brothers wherever they might be heading. So I kind of just want to see that happen just to see how often they might break character and make Ivy now laugh or Ivy now laugh at them. Just thinking about it is making me smile and laugh because it's just so absurd, and it would just make me laugh at how absurd it is. So yeah, don't put it past them, mate.
No, I wouldn't, and I didn't even think about that, but there's part of me that loves it and part of me that absolutely hates it. But I don't know, like, why not? Especially if GYV are legitimately going to be leaving in September, you know, that's going to leave Schism down to just Ava and Joe Gacy. So they want to buff up Schism's numbers and they don't have anything for the Creeds to do on the main roster. Like, I don't know. Why not? That kind of sounds fun.
Give them names like Chet Johnson and Chip Rogers or something. Something very like American versus the very UK sounding names of the Dyad.
Rip Fowler. Yeah, exactly. Rip Fowler and, wow, I can't even think of the other one's name right now.
Jagger Reed.
Thank you. Like, those names, like, will never stick with me. Will never stick. But anyway, yeah, no, I kind of like that. I think I kind of like that, actually. Like, I don't know how good it would be, like you said, but it's just kind of funny. It's just kind of funny. All right, let's keep going here. We had Kalani Jordan in her second singles match in NXT TV against Cora Jade, 3 minutes, 55 seconds. Dana Brooke in the corner of Kalani Jordan. We saw Cora Jade pick up the win here tonight. As I feel like she probably should have, where you know, she is kind of a upper mid card main event level heel right now, who hasn't been doing a whole heck of a lot. I feel like she kind of needs to get some, you know, get some wins and kind of I don't say build herself back up, but you know, she hasn't been really on TV a whole heck of a lot, you know, compared to, like, you know, Roxanne Perez, for example. So I feel like, you know, the win here for her was kind of inevitable. But Kalani Jordan, I am super impressed with Kalani Jordan so far. You know, last week, her debut, I was talking with Brad, you know, caller Brad and Josh last week. And we were all very impressed with what we saw. I mean, it wasn't a perfect match by any stretch of imagination, but everything she does in the ring, like her selling is great. the gymnastic moves are you know, the way she, you know, incorporates the gymnastics into her wrestling. I really, really dig what we see with Kalani Jordan. I feel like the pairing with Dana Brooke is I guess as good as it can be. You know, it's probably just because of the gymnastics background. Well, it's almost definitely because of the gymnastics background. But I mean, if you don't have anything else for Dana Brooke to do on the main roster, like I keep saying, you know, have her try to elevate, you know, some newer talent as much as Dana Brooke can elevate a newer talent. So I'm fine with it. She had some involvement here tonight. I think out of everybody in the match, Dana Brooke looked the worst, and she wasn't even in the match. But you know, she picked up, I think it was, what, a kendo stick or a baseball bat? I forget what it was, but it was some sort of a – it was a kendo stick, okay. It was a long cylindrical weapon. That's all I remembered in my brain. And she's, like, trying to hit Cora Jade with it after Cora Jade was trying to attack Kalani Jordan with it. And, like, just the way she was swinging it, I'm like, have you ever even – like, did you rehearse this? Like, I don't know. It just was not believable. There was really no conviction there. So I think that kind of says something, I think, about Kalani Jordan, but and Cora Jade, for that matter. You know, Dana Brooke, you know, she's been doing this for a very long time. She's still not the greatest in between the ropes, whereas the two standouts are the two newbies, you know, well, I guess newbies, like Cora Jade, not so much at this point, but you know what I mean? The two developmental talent, I feel like made Dana Brooke look like a fool, even though she wasn't necessarily in the match, but just her involvement. Bruce, you haven't had a chance to talk about Kalani Jordan yet. So what do you think about her and the match overall?
Yeah, people read my report last week, though, they would have seen that I was high on her as well. And that, the gymnastics background, the stuff that she showed in the ring, providing a glimpse of what we saw early in Tiffany Stratton, made us so high on her. And so one thing about Jordan that is different from Stratton is they gave us a lot of time to get used to who Stratton would be with all those vignettes. You never saw her, actually, right? We never saw her face until she debuted, but we knew from the vignettes what to expect from her character, and that character pretty much has stayed the same since then. I mean, she's improved, of course, but for the most part, she's kind of still that same rich girl character, right? And with Kalani Jordan, we never really got to see, or we've never really been primed, I guess, to think of her as a certain type of character, right? You just kind of look at her and you see almost like an Alexa Bliss type baby face from when Alexa Bliss first debuted at NXT, kind of athletic baby face, or who had like a gymnastics dance background. So Dana Brooke definitely looked the worst of all the three women in the match, even though, like you said, she wasn't in the match until she came in afterwards. The swinging of the kendo stick was very hard to watch. It was true. Jade is getting to a point where they're relying on her to call matches and be the one to navigate out there. Now, the one thing that Jordan did not do well tonight is she bumped very early for the final double arm DDT that Cora Jade does. And so it really didn't look like there was much impact because Jordan started falling before Jade really even got her hands clasped. So there was that. But aside from that little mishap, it was a decent match, which is kind of the match you expect to see on developmental, and it showed continued improvement from the people who, you know, should be in developmental at this point. So good for Jade and good for Jordan for what they put out in that match tonight.
The last match we haven't talked about yet, we had it was actually the first televised match of the night. I think it was like 20 minutes into the show. Because we had the Judgment Day opener, as we talked about a little bit earlier. But the first match of the night was Chase University, Andre Chase and Duke Hudson versus Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey. 11 minutes and 21 seconds saw Chase University go over. I never thought I would like Chase University as much as I do. When Andre Chase first debuted, like, I thought that gimmick had maybe like 2 months, 3 months tops, like shelf life, right? I did not think it was going to last as long as it did or as it has. I did not think he was going to necessarily get an entire like stable behind him. And he did, and he's pulled it off. And oh my God, it's like one of my favorite things on NXT every week at this point. It's just, it's entertaining. It's stupid, but it's entertaining. And that's kind of what this match was to a point. You know, it certainly had some comedic spots in it. It had the Chase, you know, all of the Chase U shenanigans and they're just all of the Chase U spots that they do, you know, week in and week out. But the crowd loves it. So keep doing them, all for it. You know, Gulak and Dempsey, they, you know, they're obviously two fantastic competitors. It made for a great match. I feel like Duke Hudson and Andre Chase, they've got some great chemistry together. We're probably going to wind up seeing Duke versus Chase at some point. I feel like the MVP of Duke University is going to wind up showing his true colors at some point. Not sure exactly when, but they've been sowing those seeds for quite a while. I think basically since Duke Hudson's been in Chase University. So, you know, I think that's – I don't want to say coming sooner rather than later, but I think that's inevitably where they're going to be going. But I also love the fact that they're now getting behind Thea Hale to get a rematch. So I guess we could also talk about that. We haven't really hit any of the segments tonight. We'll hit those in a bit. But I love how they're getting behind Thea Hale. They want for a rematch for the NXT Women's title because Tiffany Stratton was she did tap Tiffany Stratton out. She got the visual win a couple weeks ago during their title match, even though the referee didn't see it, and Tiffany Stratton wound up picking up the actual win to retain the title. But I love the fact of getting behind her. I love the energy. And I am actually kind of looking forward to that rematch. Probably going to wind up seeing it at the Great American Bash at this point. If I had to guess, I don't really think Tiffany Stratton has any other opponent lined up. That makes the most sense. I think we're only 2 weeks out from the Great American Bash at this point. So why not? We got to start building to something. So yeah, Thea Hale, let her have a rematch, especially considering the match. The first match was on just regular NXT TV. Well, I think it was Gold Rush, if I'm not mistaken, but still. So it was a named show, but it was still Wednesday night. So yeah, have her face her, you know, at a, actually, I don't know. Is Great American Bash going to be a PLE or is it Wednesday night? I don't remember.
Here, let me check.
Yeah. Yeah. We should probably know that. We should probably know that. But still, looking forward to that. As you check that, anything to say about Chase University versus Gulak and Dempsey and the Hale rematch for the title?
So Wikipedia says it's going to be July 30th, which is a Sunday. Oh, come on, a Sunday? Really? All right. So the Chase U match, yeah, it was an opening tag team match in NXT. Thea Hill was able to put Drew Gulak and the Kimura lock on the outside, and because they went to the ground at an angle, the ref wasn't able to see them from the ring, and so that did not cause a disqualification. One thing I forgot to say during the Coffee Stacks match is, because there's interference here, it just triggered my mind, is if you're going to throw out Wolfgang and Mark Coffey because you think they used the tire iron on Stacks, why don't you just call for the disqualification and give the match to Stacks? Okay, but that aside, I've been saying for what feels like 6 years now that Duke Hudson is going to turn on Chase U and try and take over. So I've been waiting for that. And part of me wonders if him getting that little bit of time as the leader with Chase U gone has got to change a bit of his mindset because of all the work he had to go through to be the leader of Chase U. Then again, he did seem to kind of relish that role. So we'll see. And then, yeah, the only other person I can think about right now that is in line to wrestle Tiffany Stratton for the title would be someone like Blair Davenport, but I think what they're going to do instead is have a blow-off between her and Roxanne Perez at Great American Bash, probably some kind of maybe like a last woman standing match or some kind of gimmick match because of not just laid out this feud. If you think about Blair Davenport's interview tonight, you think of, you know, her, how she injured the other women too, but talking about how basically she's just kind of lay it into people in our group chat. Kelly said playing a bully should come naturally to her, and I said, but I'm ching. If you don't know why, just look her up. But yeah, so I'm thinking they're going to be kind of off there. So the only other person that makes sense is having that rematch with Thea Hill, because again, she did have that visual tap. She hasn't had a singles rematch since for that title. And just looking at the depth chart, yeah, there's really no one else set up right now, unless you want to go with Liar Valkyria, but we just had that. Cora Jade, but just kind of just out of nowhere, and she's not, you know, two heels at this point. Maybe that might be the best call. So, yeah, most likely Thea Hill, most likely Great American Bash, and then Davenport and Perez, I'm assuming some kind of getting match.
All right, so let's hit some of these non-wrestling segments here. So we had the Gigi Dolin and Kiana James segment. Gigi Dolin with a bit of a video package talking about the person that Kiana James used to be. Kiana James watching it backstage and getting a little bit peeved off that she was basically saying Gigi was saying these things about her. We also had a segment with Von Wagner and Robert Stone, Mr. Stone. They haven't called him Robert Stone in a while now. Von Wagner, Mr. Stone backstage, continuing to talk about Von Wagner's past and his childhood and upbringing. And at the very end of that segment, Von Wagner actually showed some humanity and thanked Robert Stone for basically allowing him to feel comfortable in his own skin again, I guess. I thought that was kind of a nice moment, even though it was extremely poorly acted. Let's see. We also had a segment from last week. Actually, you have Eddie Thorpe and Gable Steveson walking out of the building after Eddie won his NXT Underground match against Damon Kemp. Gable Steveson kind of alluded to the fact that, hey, he's got a lot of things going on right now. He's not sure what he wants to do, but he likes being here in NXT. So we'll see what happens there. But hey, if he's saying that on live NXT TV, my guess is he's going to be around in NXT for a little while. We also saw, we talked a little bit about it earlier, but Wes Lee was being interviewed backstage by Mackenzie Mitchell when Dominic and Rhea Ripley walked up to him and essentially challenged him to an open challenge. That Wes Lee hasn't done in quite some time. We talked about the segment a little bit already. I thought it was very well done, honestly, and really kind of showcased how annoying and I guess manipulative Judgment Day can be. Then we also saw we talked a little bit about that Thea Hale firing up for her rematch. We also saw a tweet of Noam Dar looking all sad and depressed because he lost his NXT UK Heritage Cup or NXT Heritage Cup. I don't think they're calling it the UK Heritage Cup anymore. So yeah, NXT Heritage Cup, which I think is fantastic. I love his. I kind of love this whole like sad Corbin demeanor that he's been doing since losing the title or losing the cup rather. I think it's just fantastic. So keep doing that, Noam Dar. And then we also had a spot where we saw Yulisa Leon and Valentina Feroz backstage being interviewed. We saw Los Lotharios come up to them, kind of hitting on them, saying, hey, why don't you hang out with us for the night? And then we saw Dragon Lee and Nathan Fraser show up and be like, hey, is there a problem here? They're kind of with us. And run off Los Lotharios. So I'm kind of wondering if we're going to wind up seeing a tag match at some point in the near future between Dragon Lee, Fraser, and Los Lotharios. So I know those are a whole bunch of segments I threw at you all at once. Talk about what you want to talk about.
Yeah, so with Feroz and Leon and that whole thing, one, I love Valentina Feroz from the moment that she really stepped in NXT and I saw her, and her improvement's been gradual, not extreme, but gradual. And, you know, her tag team partner was injured for a bit too, but after 2 hours, I just looked at her and I said, you know what, strap the rocket to her back. She's so good. Her eye rolls at Los Lotharios when they appeared were just so good. And I wonder if what we're going to see here is a tag team match between Los Lotharios and then Nathan Frazer and Dragon Lee, and then maybe the heel's got to win somehow. The one who gets the victory is going to challenge him to a UK Cup or a Heritage Cup match. You got me saying UK now, Nate. But for me, that was the other thing that I forgot from Kenny Dima was he brought up these two women, and I knew I wanted to say something about Feroz, but at least he came back to it here. That's a question for me to say about the Wagner and Stone segment. We talked about the Hale segment and Trace U. We talked about Nile already. And then I know there's one segment you brought up that I'm definitely missing, which was right before the Feroz and Frazer segment. Well, it's probably Dar.
Yeah, Noam Dar.
Yeah, no, it's really him taking this character to that level is great. And I know there's people who are concerned that you can't get far with his character, and that's true. But I think what this character does show is that when he does get to a higher level and he's asked to perform a character, they're going to have full confidence in him that he's willing to perform that character to the fullest and believe in it and come across as believing. So you look at him, you look at Tiffany Stratton, they are people who, when they walk out, you have no concerns about them believing in who they present themselves to be on screen, right? So that's something you really can't teach, and for him to have that, even for this sort of gimmick, which, yes, you have sort of a title with the Heritage Cup associated with him, but it's not necessarily a recognized championship. So it gives a good spot for someone like Noam Dar to work with his character, and I think what he's doing is really just showing them that he's not afraid to do things to make himself look silly, which can get you in a bad place in WWE, but also I think he's showing them that he's willing to do what it takes to get his character to the next level, right? A level beyond where this character should be at. And that's, I think, something that you can, if you're able to do that, it speaks highly of you as a professional wrestler, not just in terms of what you can do in the ring, but how you're able to present your character and get people to believe in you in a certain way. So I think him being now stateside and being on TV most every week and having people around him that he can help is a boon not just to him but to NXT as well, because, you know, if you would have told me when that first UK, or not the Cruiserweight Classic, this guy Noam Dar was going to turn into this guy, then I would have told you, yeah, right, nah, that's not good. I can't, that's just too extreme, right? I can't see that happening, but he's made it work. And you know, if it was his idea to have the three people around him or if it was someone else's idea, whatever, it's working and it helps them and they're getting experience as well and they're getting on TV and you really can't ask. And he's still in his 20s, I think. So Noam Dar is definitely someone who, when you look at NXT in 2023, you're going to look at him as one of those foundational pieces for the year.
All right, and with that, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show for the night. So I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which you can catch on pwtorch.com. I try to get them up pretty much as NXT goes off the air. So just a few minutes after NXT goes off the air, I'll get them up on the site, and you can see what I thought of the show if you can't listen to us live. And if you can listen to us live, well, we're usually on the PW Torch Daily Cast on Wednesdays when the recording drops, either Wednesday or early Thursday. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. You'll have my report for the show next week. And again, you can catch me on the Wake Hill Pro Wrestling post show, Holy Talk Collision, from last Saturday, or I guess 3 nights ago on Saturday, with the main event of CM Punk versus Samoa Joe. So, yeah, we'll see you next week, everybody.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. And we're gonna let you go now because Bruce has some kittens to throw out a window. We'll see you next week.
Oh, come on, Nate.
I had to.
All right. Are we off the other?